Hi, this is Lauren Labano, Associate Editor of Neurology Reviews. With me is Dr. Fabrizio Benedetti, Professor of Neurophysiology and Human Physiology at the University of Turin Medical School in Italy. At the 54th Annual Scientific Meeting of the American Headache Society, Dr. Benedetti discussed placebo responses and how therapeutic rituals affect the patient's brain. We're going to talk with Dr. Benedetti now. What are some types of therapeutic rituals and what effect do they have on the brain?
Well, we are studying a placebo response or placebo effect because placebo response is a very good model to understand the therapeutic act or in general the ritual of the therapeutic act. So when we study actually the placebo response, we study the whole psychosocial context around the patient, around the treatment. So we can understand what is going on in the patient's brain after a presentation of many sensory and social stimuli. For example, there are many social stimuli which represent the ritual, the overall ritual of the therapeutic act. And for example, there are many rituals in the medical practice. For example, the ritual of taking a pill, the ritual of an injection, the ritual of surgery, which is pretty powerful, and the ritual of medical device, or the ritual of alternative and complementary medicine like acupuncture. So when we want to study the placebo response, actually we want to study what happens in the patient's brain after the presentation of all these rituals in the clinical and medical practice.
What mechanisms are important in triggering a placebo response, and how do previous experiences contribute to the patient's response?
Well, previous experience is very important. We have learned over the last few years that learning is important in placebo response. So we can say that actually placebo response is a learning phenomenon. So, for example, when we give an effective medical treatment many times and then we replace the real medical treatment with a placebo, usually, I would say 80 or 90% of the patients will respond to the placebo treatment. By contrast, if we give a placebo treatment for the first time to naive patients, sometimes there is a significant response, some other times there is no response at all. So learning is very important. After a presentation of many effective medical treatments, many times, virtually, in our experience at least, virtually all patients, more or less 90% of the patients will respond to placebo. So the previous experience is very, very important.
How do good responders differ from non-responders?
Well, this is a very important question because we are learning that at least two mechanisms are involved in placebo responsiveness. There are at least two mechanisms which differentiate placebo responders and non-responders. The first is learning, and the second one is genetics. Learning is important, so responders and non-responders can be discriminated on the basis of learning. For example, it is possible to turn a placebo non-responder into a placebo responder after learning procedure. To give you an example, if we give an effective treatment like an effective painkiller several days in a row and then we replace the real painkiller with a placebo, virtually all patients will respond. By contrast, if we give a placebo for the first time, there is a very high percentage of placebo non-responders. This means that it is possible to turn placebo non-responders into placebo responders by means of a learning procedure. The second mechanism is probably genetics. So we are learning pretty much about genetics, and this is not surprising because you know, many neurotransmitters and many neuromodulators are involved in placebo responsiveness. So if there is a genetic variant of a neurotransmitter, actually there is also a difference across the different individuals in placebo responsiveness. So, for example, we don't know anything about the genetics of placebo responses in pain. We don't know anything, unfortunately, about the genetic genetics of placebo responses in Parkinson's disease, but we know something about two psychiatric disorders. One is depression, the second one is social anxiety. And in this case, in social anxiety, for example, a genetic variant of the serotonin transporter is involved in a placebo response. There are some genotypes which respond pretty well to placebo treatment, some other genotypes which do not respond at all. So, in conclusion, I mean, we can differentiate placebo responders from non-responders on the basis of learning and on the basis of genetics, different genetic variants of different neurotransmitters which are involved in placebo response.
How effective is a typical placebo response compared with the response to pharmacological agents?
Well, there is a huge variability in a placebo, in the magnitude, I mean, in the magnitude of the placebo response. Of course, in most of the cases, pharmacological response is much larger than a placebo response, but there are some instances, I mean, there are some examples. So one of these examples is pain, and particularly pain in IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, and in this case, there is one study which was published more or less 4 to 5 years ago, probably more actually, 5, 6, or 7 years ago, and there was a really a huge placebo response after a placebo treatment, because the psychological component in IBS is very important, so it is not surprising that placebo response and the placebo component of any treatment in IBS is really very, very large. So in general, across different conditions, medical conditions, across different therapeutic interventions, actually the response to a drug is much larger than the response to a placebo treatment. But there are some examples, particularly in pain, in which the placebo response sometimes can be as large as the response to a drug. Some other times it can be even larger than the response to a drug. So there is a huge variability. It depends on the therapeutic interventions. It very much depends on the medical conditions. It very much depends on the different circumstances on the patients. This is a challenge for future placebo research. I mean, to understand how it is possible to modulate placebo response and to make it sometimes as large as the response to a drug, to a real drug.
How do placebo responses affect clinical practice? Do you have any advice for clinicians?
Well, this is an important ethical problem because we need to discuss a lot about the administration of placebo in clinical practice. In my opinion, there is one advantage to use placebos in clinical practice, and the advantage is that there is sometimes, not in all cases, of course, but sometimes there is the possibility to reduce the intake of drugs, particularly the intake of toxic drugs. For example, if we want to use narcotics to treat pain, for instance, post-operative pains by using morphine, we can devise a protocol, a therapeutic protocol, in which we give placebo and we give morphine. So just imagine a situation in which you give morphine on Monday, morphine on Tuesday, on Wednesday, on Thursday, and then on Friday you replace morphine with a placebo. In the long run, you can reduce the intake of morphine. So many scientists, many clinicians all over the world world are trying to develop this kind of protocol to exploit this mechanism of placebo responses in clinical practice to reduce drug intake. So in my opinion, today, the best possibility to exploit this placebo mechanism is to reduce the intake of many drugs or many pharmacological agents.
Thank you for your time, Dr. Benedetti.
You're welcome.